Welcome to Supernatural Podcast, episode number 59 for the episode In the Beginning. The episode was written by Jeremy Carver and directed by Steve Boyum. The episode originally aired in the U.S. on October 2nd, 2008. Let's move on to a synopsis with Kristen and Beth.
Summary for Season 4, Episode 3, In the Beginning. The episode begins as Sam is sneaking out of the hotel while Dean's asleep. Seems to happen a lot. Ruby picks him up and she says, "Ready?" Sam says, "Definitely." Back in the hotel room, Dean's dreaming about hell. He sees flashes of red light and screaming. He jolts awake and Castiel is sitting on his bed. He says, "Listen to me. You have to stop it," and touches Dean's forehead. Suddenly, Dean is awakened on a bench by a police officer. Dean doesn't know where he is.
Dean enters Jay Bird's diner and sits down at the counter. He asks the guy next to him where he is, and he's in Lawrence, Kansas. A stranger comes to talk to the man and calls him John Winchester. It's Dean's dad.
Dean follows John out of the diner, but when he rounds a corner, Castiel is there. Dean asks Castiel if it's real, and Castiel says, "Very." Dean asks how angels can bend time. He says, "What, angels got their hands on some DeLoreans? What am I doing here?" Castiel says he has to stop it. And before Dean can get an answer of what it is, he's vanished.
Dean finds John at the car dealership. He's planning on buying a 1964 Volkswagen van. But Dean has to stop it and convinces him to look at the 1967 Impala instead. Dean asks if John has felt any cold spots, smelled any sulfur, or if there's been any cattle mutilations lately. Dean's getting a little too weird for John, but John still buys the Impala.
Dean trails John and Mary on their date. Mary finds Dean in the alley behind the diner and asks why he's following them. After a fight, Dean pins Mary against the wall and sees that her bracelet has anti-possession charms. Dean realizes she's a hunter.
After the date, Dean insists he meet Mary's family. Her father doesn't trust other hunters, but Mary's mom saves the day and invites Dean to dinner. Mary's parents are named Samuel and Deanna. Sound familiar? At dinner, Dean says he was following Mary because he thought something was after her boyfriend. Deanna says, "John Winchester mixing up with spirits?" Samuel agrees that he's a nice civilian. Dean has a little inward laugh at all of this civilian talk circling his father. Turns out Samuel is hunting a possible demon on the Witchire farm. Dean thinks it could be the yellow-eyed demon and wants to work with him. But Samuel refuses. He says, "What part of I work alone don't you understand?"
Over at the Witchire farm, Samuel shows up in a priest suit to find out the situation. Dean opens the door, similarly in a priest suit. He's beat him to the case. Charlie, the dead man's son, says that his dad used to drink sometimes, and he got rough with his mom. A stranger showed up saying that he wanted the beatings to stop, and the next thing he knew, his dad was dead. Charlie said he could have sworn that in the right light, the stranger's eyes were yellow.
Back at Samuel's house, Dean says he's going after the demon, and he's going to kill it. He says a hunter in Colorado, Daniel Elkins, has the demon-killing cult. Samuel says, "Yeah, I heard about the cult. Used to tell it to Mary as a bedtime story." Samuel asks how Dean knows where this demon is going to be. John had made a list of every place the demon visited. Samuel asks how his dad could have known the Witchire farm was hit when it happened 2 days ago. Dean says his dad was psychic. Samuel thinks Dean's crazy, but Dean says he's going to stop it once and for all.
Dean goes to say goodbye to Mary. Dean says, "I wanted to tell you, it doesn't matter what your dad thinks. I like that John kid." Dean asks what John was like. Mary says, "He's sweet, he's kind. Even after the war and all, he still believes in happily ever after. He's everything a hunter isn't." Mary says that John is going to ask her to marry him tomorrow, and she wants to run away with him. She doesn't want this life anymore. She wants to have a family and to be safe. She says the worst thing she can think of is that her children will be raised into this life like she was. Dean begins to tear up a bit. He says, "On November 2nd, 1983, don't get out of bed. Promise me you won't get out of bed." Dean is breaking down, and it's so sad.
Dean's driving to the next victim's house, and Castiel shows up in the passenger seat. Dean says that once he kills the demon, everything goes back to normal. The boys grow up playing Little League and chasing tail. Castiella says, "You realize if you do alter the future, your father, you, Sam, you'll never become hunters. And all those people you saved, they'll die." Dean says, "I realize." Castiella retorts, "And you don't care?" Dean says, "Oh, I care. I care a lot. But these are my parents, and I'm not going to let them die again. I can't."
At the victim's house, the yellow-eyed demon is trying to get a woman to agree to let him come for something in 10 years. Samuel bursts through the door and shoots the demon with a shotgun. The demon throws Samuel against the wall with his mind, and Mary grapples with him. The demon asks where they've been hiding her, and says that he likes her because she has spunk.
Back at Samuel's house, Dean says that they have to kill this demon or it's going to kill Mary. Samuel is confused and demands to know how Dean knows that's going to happen. Dean says he's from the future and that he's really Samuel's grandson. It sounds like a lot to grasp, but after a moment of hesitation, Samuel's on board. He asks to see the cult, but Dean says he doesn't let anyone hold it, not even his own grandfather.
Samuel shows his yellow eyes and shoots Dean's chair against the wall. Dean is pissed. The yellow-eyed demon asks if Dean is one of his special kids, but he realizes that Dean must have a sister or brother. Dean asks why the yellow-eyed demon chose his mom, and the YED says it's all about picking the best to breed his master race. He tells Dean that he's going to stand over his baby brother's bed and bleed into his mouth. Dean tells him that he's the one that is the person to kill him. He says, "One person you're not going to save is your grandfather." The YED plunges a knife into his host's abdomen, and Dean's grandmother screams, "No!" The YED goes after her too and breaks her neck. Now both Dean's grandparents are dead.
Mary and John have run away. They're sitting in the Impala, and John proposes to her. He says he will always love her for exactly who she is, no matter that she has secrets. Samuel shows up and rips Mary from the car. In a scuffle, he breaks John's neck. Samuel reveals that he's the yellow-eyed demon and tells Mary that he's killed her parents, too. Now that he's left her with no one else, he's in a position to bargain. He says he will make sure nothing bad happens to her for 10 years, and after that, he will come for something. She says, "What, and all it costs is my soul?" He says, "Oh no, you can keep your soul. I just need permission. In 10 years or so, I just need to swing by your house for something. As long as I'm not interrupted, nobody gets hurt. I promise." Dean drives up just in time to see the yellow-eyed demon sealing the deal with a kiss on Mary's lips. Castiel touches Dean's shoulder and he's gone.
Dean wakes up in the hotel room. Dean says he couldn't stop any of it. Castiel says, "Destiny can't be changed, Dean. All roads lead to the same destination." Dean asks, "Then why'd you send me back?" Castiel says, "For the truth. Now you know everything we do." Dean is at his wit's end. He says, "What the hell are you talking about?" Castiel says they know what Azazel did to his brother, but they don't know why. He says, "Your brother is headed down a dangerous road, Dean, and we're not sure where it leads. So stop it, or we will." I'm Kristen.
I'm Beth.
Thanks for listening.
And let's move along to analysis and theories in my discussion with Josh. Hi, this is Ellen.
This is Josh.
And what did you think of this episode?
Well, we had big revelations, loads of tension, and some great acting. What wasn't there to like?
I don't know.
Well, maybe a couple of little things, but still, it was a really great episode, and definitely one for longtime fans.
Oh, yes. I like to think if this season is on fire. I haven't been this riveted since first season. Like, every episode is great.
Oh, wow.
Where's this coming from? I finished watching this episode and I just went, oh my God, oh, I can't even comprehend everything they just told me.
I know.
We're
used
stunned.
To little bit of morsels here and there, and this was just like a full meal.
I know, exactly. And it was one thing after another. I swear it's like Kripke could just read our minds or something.
Right.
We got so many things answered all at once. You know, I think the thing is Kripke's finally realizing, you know what, I'm just going to give my fans what they want. Stop pandering to all the ratings and trying to get new viewers. Of course he wants new viewers, but He doesn't want to just focus on what would keep the casual fans happy. He wants to keep the fans happy.
Well, that's definitely... I can't imagine a casual fan getting near as much out of this episode as people who've been with it from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. But the then part at the beginning was longer, and it gave us, or the new people, or the casual fans, a lot of backstory all at once so that they could catch up.
That's true, if you're paying attention closely.
That's true. And I could talk about this episode for hours. There were probably like 1,000 things. If I could make a list, I could do it all. But, I pretty much spent Sunday on this episode, so I think I had to stop. We have enough. Enough to talk about.
That's right.
You know, I bet we're going to keep coming back to this all season, and I'm sure I'm going to be watching this episode a few more times because I know I didn't get everything.
Yeah, it's definitely a repeat viewer.
And the writing was so clever. At first I thought, you know, when Castiel said, you have to stop it, I thought he meant he was grieving for his parents, and this was a way for him to go back and say goodbye to them.
Oh, really?
And then when he said it again on the street corner, I thought he meant to stop the yellow eyed demon. And right. Then finally, the moron in me figured it out that he meant Sam, like way at the end when Castiel said, hello, you just didn't get it.
I think we were all right there with you. Nobody knew exactly what he meant until the very end.
I took it to mean something totally different at the beginning. So it just, the whole episode was kind of a morph.
Yeah.
So that was cool to me. I don't know why I would immediately think that Dean needed to get over what happened. Maybe it's because my own dad died less than a year ago, so maybe it kind of struck a chord there with me, but I loved it. I thought it was really clever the way they wrote it.
Oh, I agree.
So, what did you like specifically?
Oh, well, specifically... The big one is finally we get some answers about Mary.
No freaking kidding.
I mean, the dead horse we keep beating each week finally got up and rode away.
I know, we were just saying that last week. Of course, we talk about that just about every week.
Right. I was so happy. I mean, I never would have guessed that she came from a family of hunters.
I think, actually, going back and looking at my notes from ages and ages ago, I had that as one of the possibilities, that Mary was a hunter. Oh. And I crossed it off and wrote no way next to it.
Well, she seems so, you know, grown-up Mary seems so passive and tranquil.
Yeah.
The sassy is this Mary.
But not all of the hunters we've met have been like the Winchesters.
Right.
Some of them are very serious and very laid back and hidden. Most of them just, like, deal with it. They don't go out and you know.
Live as nomad.
Incite new problems. Yeah.
And, you know, I think we all guessed. It was made pretty obvious that she made some kind of deal or had some kind of involvement with old Yellow Eyes. But the way it actually happened put such a different spin on it that I didn't see coming.
We even talked about that we thought it was some sort of deal or that they knew each other somehow.
It was such a fresh spin, and it made it so much less selfish than what we would have imagined it, or that I would have imagined it, you know. You're like, how can she make a kind of deal where she gives away her child? But seeing it this way, it makes it much more sympathetic towards her.
Yeah, and we'd always wondered why Sam and not Dean. Like, Dean is the firstborn. If you look at mythology all over the world, it's always the firstborn. Not this time. And I'm like, why? What was Dean just not, he didn't have any powers or any sort of thing going on there that the demon would want, but now it makes sense.
Right. So another question answered.
And another one brought up, but that's for later. Right. Just starting at the beginning, how Dean used the alias Dean Van Halen.
That's crazy.
That was a good one, because Van Halen was around then, but they weren't popular. So he had to think back. He's like, ooh, who can I pick that they aren't going to know that?
That's cool. Pretty funny. It's the first thing that comes to his mind.
And I can't imagine what John was thinking, sitting there having this guy sitting next to him just staring at him openly.
I tell you, I'd have been so creeped out. I don't know if people were just more tolerant of weirdos in the 70s, but... If I had had that encounter with Dean, I would have been heading the other way at top speed.
Yeah,
I mean, especially after all the clues he gave, like with the cell phone and Sonny and Cher broke up, and right, like Sonny. The guy came across as a raving lunatic. But then again, this was the 70s, the land of drugs.
I was wondering, because when he just kind of pops up in the used car lot, and that's when would have been really concerned that this crazy man is following me.
Yeah. And he's like, no, you want this car. Maybe things were different in the 70s.
Maybe they were more trusting.
If I ran into somebody like that, I'd be like, hello, get away from me. Go away. But I liked the interactions between Dean and John. I mean, Dean is trying to seem like just some guy, even though he really just wants to go, oh my God, I'm your son. You know, you can tell it's like written all over him. But those interactions were really great. And the whole Back to the Future setup.
Oh my goodness.
That was awesome.
Definitely had some Back to the Future, you know, nods when it came to interacting with his mom.
Oh yeah. That and then the diner scene was like a perfect recreation.
Right. Yeah, it gets a little bit, you know, almost Oedipal there with Mary for a while.
Yeah, and I love how Dean automatically goes, man, I wish I could tell Sam. I wish Sam were here to see how hot our mom is.
Which is nice that he's thinking of his brother, but also a little bit weird and creepy.
It's so creepy. I like, though, that they didn't go Back to the Future and have the hot mom also have a crush on her son.
Yes, thank goodness.
Yeah, that would have been a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been too much, because there was already seemed to be some chemistry going on there, just taking the wrong turn.
Yeah, very much the wrong turn on that one. There are actually quite a few people out on the web talking about all of the wincest
connotations
in this episode and how it just feeds that. And I'm like, oh, man, leave it alone.
I didn't even think of that.
I try not to go there. I really do. But I just thought I'd throw that out there because the fandom is exploding over that.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But, you know, it was interesting about the character of John, because I really liked him. I liked how they portrayed him as kind of the loser wimp guy to set up just what a difference he was before and after Mary died. But at the same time, it was also fell in my do not like category a little bit, because it didn't seem true to character. I know we'll get into that later, but I just wanted to... It's kind of a dichotomy with John.
I agree, and since we're talking about it now...
Sorry!
I think young John did a great job. I thought he was a good actor and engaging. Yeah. But he was totally different from the John we know. And no offense to Jeffrey Dean Morgan, but he aged a lot in just a few years.
Yeah, it was hard to believe young John was really that age, though. Because he was already a corporal in the Marine Corps. He had been to war and came back and still looked like he was 18.
Right, exactly. Way less old than we expected.
Yeah, but if you do the math, like this has been something that's been bugging a lot of the fans since season one. The math doesn't add up for him anyhow. Because if he were really in the war and had been born when he did and was the age he was, he would have had to join the military at like 16. So maybe he lied, as a lot of kids did.
Right.
And joined and so forth. And then he's really only like 22 or whatever it is. I tell you, the kid looked more 18 or younger. I mean,
he definitely looked like a man in comparison to the way Jeffrey Dean Morgan looks. And
I did have a hard time seeing JDM in him.
Right.
The look and the mannerisms and whatever. But I thought the actress who played young Mary was perfect.
Oh, yeah. And the difference, like I said, Mary was also completely changed from the Mary we know. And we know less about her. We spent less time with her. But she always was this more, you know, passive and kind of calming influence in their life. You know, even when Dean, we see his wish is granted and he gets to spend some time with her.
Yeah.
She didn't seem like the spitfire. And, you know, I guess losing your fiance and your parents all in one night would probably do something to contribute to that kind of change.
Yeah, I you know, because we saw the same kind of change in John when his, you know, his wife died. So, yeah, that can change somebody. You know, she's not idealistic anymore. She just wants a different life.
Right.
A total break. Yeah? maybe she got serious. You know, a lot of teenagers are kind of crazy, and then they get to their 20s and settle right. down, and they're like, okay, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm
you
going to
children.
Adopt that. Yep.
And you name them after your dead parents.
Yeah, I love how Dean was named after a chick.
That's great. I guess it's possible if he really was affecting the future or the past that he was named after himself.
Oh, boy. I don't know if we should... You know, this episode can make your head spin really fast if you think too much about it.
Right. Which I have a theory for that, but we'll get into that later.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, and getting into that, I think it was very interesting to see the first interaction between Azazel and Mary. You know, basically the fulcrum of the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, when you think about it, Azazel killed two of Dean's grandparents, his mom, his dad, and indirectly Sam, which then also led to Dean's death. So,
oh boy.
It seems like Dean stabbing him was letting him off easy.
Yeah, I like how, I mean, we know the yellow-eyed demon picks favorites, but he took an immediate liking to Mary. Yes, he looks for strong hunters who will be strong parents, but, like, he really liked her.
Yeah. Which was very unfortunate for her, because that means that all of her family gets killed.
That's true. You know, it might be different if Mary's parents hadn't been hunters. But then again, it might make your head start spinning. Let's not go there.
Right.
I want Mary's bracelet. I'll just put it right now. I want her bracelet.
I didn't even notice it.
Yeah, it was great. And that's how Dean knew she was a hunter.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yes, that bracelet.
Yes.
That one.
She is an accessorizer.
Maybe that's where Dean inherited it.
Dean does like the jewelry.
Especially if it's functional.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see Sam wearing any sort of trinkets. So, Dean, he had a really tough role in this episode. I think had to have been difficult. One, he wasn't really familiar with the characters, even though they were his family. And he had to play off them differently than he would with JDM and with Samantha. But he was absolutely heartbreaking in this episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, after Mary telling him that she never wanted her kids to be raised in a hunter-type environment like what she had, and his tears, and... I mean, and then he tells her, you have to promise me not to get out of bed. And, I mean, she is just like, whoa, what's up with this guy? Like, why? But she trusted him. Like, they had some sort of connection. And, you know, my bet is just for people that you are really meant to be close to, you do have kind of an automatic connection. Maybe she, right. I mean, she didn't understand it. But she was like, hey, I really trust this guy. Sure, he might be crazy, but there's something about him. And I think the whole family kind of picked up on that, which is really cool, because then they didn't have to go through this huge discussion and, no, I don't believe you. And, you know, it's just kind of convenient, but at the same time, it was really nice to see, like, Dean with family.
Oh, I agree. I think that, you know, of course, that's something you can never test.
Yes.
But there's something to be said for the fact of them knowing that he's, on some level, that there's a connection there, that, you know, he's their part of their family. But like you said, that scene where he asked Mary not to get out of bed was just one of my highlights. That was so well done, and he really did a great job bringing the emotion. It had to be a tough scene to play, make it believable, but they really knocked it out of the park.
His personality and the way he played that role the whole episode, it went all over the board, every emotion. And then there was that scene where he was trapped by the yellow-eyed demon. And that the camera pans in and zooms in and looks at him, and that look of pure hatred on his face.
Right.
I mean, I was just amazed. I mean, Jensen, we've always said, is a very talented actor, but this episode has just cinched it. If you aren't a huge fan of him after watching this episode, there's something wrong with you.
Oh, yeah. And imagine the frustration to be put in that situation where you know what's going to happen. You know how it's going to turn out. And you don't know the details exactly, mm-hmm. but you know where this is all going to lead to. And just frantically trying to change that and being thwarted at every turn. And just that heartbreak and frustration that goes with it. It's just, it was really done well as an actor and as a, you know, a storyline.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And then he arrives in that crappy car just too late to stop it. I can only imagine how he was feeling. He's like, oh, I didn't succeed. Like, all of everything that's going to happen is my fault. Even though it's not his fault, that's probably what he was thinking at the moment.
Yeah, because, you know, Dean blaming himself for everything, so.
Yep. And at the time, he thought that's why he was sent back, was to stop Yellow-Eyed Demon. Jeremy Carver wrote this episode, and I think he did a really good job. And what has he done before? A Supernatural Christmas.
Right.
And Mystery Spot. And what else?
A Long Distance Call.
You can kind of see a pattern here, don't you?
Yes. It's a lot of what-ifs and dealing with the past, it seems like. And the very Supernatural Christmas, definitely, it was dealing with the past and the flashbacks between the boys.
And we got a lot of information in that episode, a lot of canon.
Right. A lot about what happened to the kids when they were growing up.
And then Long Distance Call with Emmy, even though it wasn't John, it was another episode that focused on his family.
Yep.
So awesome. Very, very good writing.
Definitely. And it's funny, Mystery Spot was kind of like focused on Sam. And this one definitely focused on Dean, not Sam at all.
Yeah, a lot of people are kind of angry about that, which I suppose we should probably talk about this when we do the do not likes. But I don't think it was a detraction at all. I mean, a lot of the Sam girls were like, no, he was in for like a minute. But I think we'll find out what Sam was up to. And it really wouldn't have worked for him to be there.
I agree. I added it to my do not like list just because it was so odd. But I don't see how they could have fit another subplot into this episode.
Yeah, not a chance, really. And it was kind of nice. I know we've had a couple of these very Dean-centric episodes, not so many of the Sam-centric, but Dean has had a bit more to deal with than Sam has, honestly. Dean has a lot more issues than Sam does to work through.
And it seems to me, and I'm not sure this is going to be like this for the rest of the season, but right now we're definitely seeing things through Dean's eyes.
And oh, yeah.
The whole Sam thing is a big mystery to us, and it's a big mystery mm-hmm. to him. And maybe once we find out what's going on with Sam, it'll be back to be more about both of them.
That's true. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it in quite that way, but you're absolutely right. It works perfectly. Because we really do have Dean's perspective. And we know nothing about Sam. What he's off doing with Ruby.
Right.
I mean, he was so cryptic at the beginning of the episode. He's like, definitely ready to go. It's like, whoa.
Right.
You're very angry, Sam. What's going on? Angry Sam.
And speaking of angry Sam, I think you made this point that you kind of get the idea that Sam had a lot in common with Mary. We've always mm-hmm. made the comparison how Dean follows in his father's footsteps, but
yeah,
the whole thing about Sam wanting to get out of the hunting and he left to have a normal life and kind of like the same thing that Mary was planning on doing.
Yes. I mean, especially when you compare young John and older John and young Mary and older Mary, you see where Dean was much more like older John. But when you think of younger John, he was kind of flipped. Where it was more Sam's idealism, happily ever after, you know, Sam with the fairy tales and how he wanted to marry Jessica and settle down. His mom and dad both had that in common before her death. But Dean has some of her in him, just a little bit. I think definitely Sam is much more like Mary. But then when she wanted to kill him and wanted revenge and wanted to save her family, and that's Dean.
Right.
The protect your family is all Dean. So, but it was only until she had something horrible happen to her that came out, though.
That's true. Dean's life has been one horrible thing after another.
Ever since he was 4 years old, it's been just kind of a nightmare for him.
Right.
Sounds crazy.
Crazy.
Absolutely crazy. But it was fun to see Mary and John together and in love and starting their life. And I don't know, it was very redeeming.
It was. It was nice to see that. And it was good for Dean to see that, you know, that kind of history with his parents and his grandparents. It was great to see them as characters and him interacting with them.
It did seem kind of strange, though, that Dean didn't know the names of his grandparents.
That is strange. I guess it just didn't come up.
I mean, but Mary really liked her parents, just didn't want to be in that life.
Right. And, you know, you don't remember a lot from when you're four, and John probably didn't have a lot on his mind about them.
Yeah, and clearly he didn't like her family.
Right, they didn't care for him.
No, there was not a lot of love there. Yeah, it was more than just him being a mechanic. But, and on the lines of the actors and actresses, and we already talked about Mary and John, but the actor who played, or the actress who played Grandma, that's Allison Hosick, she plays on Reaper as Sam's mom.
That's right.
Which I thought was really ironic, because Reaper, of course, the main character, Sam,
right.
Which I wish they hadn't named Sam, by the way. He is a...
like a bounty hunter for the devil.
And he might be the devil incarnate, like his son. So you never know what's going to happen there.
It's true. So
both Sams might actually be some sort of evil.
And of course, I got a big kick out of Grandpa, because he was played by Mitch Pileggi, who used to be Skinner on The X-Files.
But wasn't it great how close he matched the mannerisms from the other actors who's played Yellow-Eyed Demon?
Yes.
He said he actually went back and watched all the episodes and practiced those mannerisms. He really did. I mean, I think that's cool for a guest star.
Yeah.
And he was spot on.
Definitely. And it was so heartbreaking and creepy, that whole scene, how it played out, because he did such a good job being the protective father, and then seeing that all turn around to be the scary, evil enemy instead.
Yeah, and the whole grandpa kissing Mary thing.
See, there's that. Well, that doesn't technically qualify as incest, because they were, what, Campbells, so.
Speaking of Campbell, I wonder if that's a reference to Bruce Campbell.
Maybe.
The family interactions were all really good.
I agree. And I also think they did a great job of making it look like the 70s, especially in the diner.
Those outfits, the guy cutting his pancakes with the knife and the fork right. And the tie.
And the guys in the booth, it was just great. The rest of it was a lot less noticeable. They were a little more, like, easy on the 70s back at the Campbell house.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, and Mary, her outfits were, like, the good stuff from the 70s.
Right.
Oh, the other thing I forgot to mention about Grandpa. How about Demon Grandpa sniffing Dean to see if he's one of the psychic kids?
That was just creepy.
That was creepy, but a really neat touch.
Yep.
Like, I've always wondered, you know, how he would know the kids when they grew up and would be able to... I don't know, it was just kind of cool that he sniffs them. Like, I never really thought too much about that, but, like, he knows them by smell.
I guess Sam's got some kind of demon stank.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, meeting young David Elkins.
Oh, right.
That was really cool how they totally went back to Salvation. That's, I think, where we met David the first time, right?
Right.
Salvation?
I believe so.
Yeah, that was so cool to see him. And then he was just like, okay. Like, he just trusted Dean. Like, okay, take this priceless gun that right. You can't replace, and I will guard with my life, and sure, go ahead back to Kansas to give it to some demon, or some hunters I don't know.
Right. Why
but he not? Trusted him. How cool is that? New appreciation for David Elkins, because he was a crotchety old man when we met him.
That's right.
Back in 2006.
Wow, has it been so long? What did you not like?
Probably making John look really different. I mean, Dean didn't recognize him.
Right.
I get that. You know, in the pilot, John was this happy, smiling guy until his wife died. Never recovered. And if you go and look at Home again, like I did this weekend, I rewatched it, and you see just how heartbroken he is. Even after all these years, he's just never been the same. And we know it played out and how he treated the boys and that the boys were just too young to remember Happy John.
Right.
But I don't know. I still didn't think it was quite true to form. Like, he seemed really wussy. I mean, really like, oh, I'm just this guy and I have no self-respect. And I know it just came across like, okay, I get it, but still.
Right, and nothing against that guy or the personality they gave him, but it just didn't quite match up with what we know about John.
Yeah, and he's a soldier.
Right.
he comes back and, you know, the guy says hi to him in the diner and he's like, hi. I'm like, okay, this is just, these are corporal in the Marine Corps. I've met a lot of Marines. John wouldn't cut it, let alone be a corporal.
I agree.
Just saying.
I agree. I mean, I thought he was great and it worked well for the episode, but there was something missing, some disconnect between the two of them.
And we still don't know anything about John's family. Boo!
He must not have much of a family.
Never mentioned him. The only thing, and I probably put this in my do not like. Do you remember back in the episode where they went to see Mary's grave?
Yes.
And they talked about her headstone and how it was put on there by an uncle that they didn't know. Like, even though there was no body there, he put up a headstone as a remembrance. And they made a big deal out of this because they're like, there's no body. Why would you do that? Okay, who is this uncle? Now that we know Mary's family, she was an only child. I mean, probably, maybe not certainly, but there were no other kids around. Not even a mention.
There's actually an uncle mentioned in the comic books. If you're a nerd like me and you've read the comic books. In the first series, Supernatural Origins, there's some random uncle that shows up with who tries to talk John out of being so crazy. And it's implied, I think, that it's Mary's uncle.
So a great uncle?
Yeah, I guess technically it would be the boy's great uncle.
So maybe they just have their terms wrong.
Yeah.
And since he's estranged, they don't really know.
And in the comic books, he gets killed, and John lets him die and pushes him over. He puts him in a car and pushes him over a cliff.
That's not very nice.
Yes.
Put him in Mary's grave. They have a headstone there already.
Well, he's being influenced by somebody who's not quite on the up and up when he does things, but
like, there's a perfectly good grave ready to go right. for somebody.
Well, that poor uncle, he tries to do right by Mary and he gets offed for it. It's nothing ever good happens to these families.
I think it's kind of cruel to end with Castiel telling Dean that Sam is headed down a dangerous road and that it's Dean's job to stop him or they will. I mean, come on, the poor guy, he's been living for such a long time with John telling Dean that Sam is going evil and he has to stop him. Right. And now this angel is telling him, who really has a very much a higher authority, that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's just more pressure on him. It's just, hasn't the boy been through enough? He just came back from hell. Let him adjust a little bit.
I think from Cassiel's point of view, he thinks he's doing him a favor, you know, giving him a chance to save his brother before they take action.
That's true. And then, of course, we get the to be continued.
Right. Which says, dun, dun, dun. Maybe this will all be addressed next episode.
Or maybe not.
Right.
With our luck, we're going to get like a standalone next time. Right. Or 2 minutes at the beginning, and then they'll move on to something different. My other do not likes are also kind of tied into my questions and speculation.
Okay.
So, did you have anything else in your do not like?
No, we covered them long before we even got to this section.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. So, do you want to start?
Sure. My question is, the big one to me from this episode was Dean really in the past, or was he just experiencing some kind of recreation of the past?
Like in What Is and What Should Never Be.
Exactly. And I'm thinking that he really just experienced it without really affecting it, so he could better understand what he's up against and what he's got to deal with Sam.
Yeah, kind of a Charles Dickens Christmas Carol kind of thing going on.
Exactly. I mean, in his mind or in the world, wherever he was interacting with people, but in reality it wasn't changing or affecting what had already happened. I think that, I mean, to me, that helps explain a lot because, you know, otherwise the whole butterfly effect, and there's no way that all of the stuff he did couldn't have somehow affected the future.
Yeah, you know, I think he was just the observer. I mean, he could interact, but it didn't really mean anything. Except that I wonder if that's entirely true. Watching Home again, I know I'm going to keep going back to this episode probably forever. But at the end, when Mary takes out the poltergeist and comes down and says, Dean, and smiles at him, and then walks over to Sam and says, Sam, I'm sorry. Well, now we know what the I'm sorry was all about.
Right.
But the look at Dean, it was, one, she was recognizing her son as an adult, as a grown man. Okay. But was there a hint of recognition that she knew Dean? Like, ah, this makes sense now. 1973 Dean is my son. Maybe as a ghost, you have another perspective. Or maybe it all made sense about why he told her not to get out of bed and how all this stuff happened. And
well, that plays into my theory, because if he really was changing the past, I think there's a really good chance she would not have gotten out of the bed. Some crazy dude who's sobbing tells you to not specific day and time to not get out of bed. That probably would stick with you.
Yeah, but when you wake up in the middle of the night and you want to go check on your kids, do you really stop and look at the calendar and go, oh, it must be that day?
I don't know. It depends on how much it was in her mind, because if it was coming up to that day and she was thinking about it.
It could be. Or she could have completely forgotten about it because nothing had happened. She hadn't been a hunter. John didn't even know about the existence of the world. So she obviously kept it very closely hidden. And maybe it was just her instinct, either as a mother or as a hunter.
That's true. But then, how would the cult have gotten back to where it was supposed to be?
That's the other big question. I was just about to bring that up. Because Dean brought his jacket with him that was just laying on him while he was sleeping.
Right.
So it wasn't on him. You know, and a lot of sci-fi TV shows, books, whatever, have taken the time travel thing very seriously. And usually, I mean, sometimes you'll see where they can't carry anything with them. Sometimes they can carry things with them. You know, but did he bring the gun back with him? Or was it all just didn't happen? Or did he just leave it there? And then Mary was like, oh, okay, I have to hide some evidence. You know, my family is dead. The police are going to be questioning me. And here there's this gun laying here. I need to hide it. How did she didn't know about the gun? She didn't know what it did.
Right.
How did that all happen? And it made my head hurt really hard. Start thinking about all these possibilities.
See, that's why it's just to say it was some kind of vision that he had to experience to really get the full deal of what he was up against, or the full story behind all of it. It just makes everything nice and neat.
It does. It does make it really nice and neat. But Cookie does like to do some funky stuff.
It's true.
It's, I don't know. I like it kind of both ways. That he did have some interaction and that he didn't.
The only reason I hope that he didn't, and I hope he realizes he didn't, because this is Dean and he's going to blame himself for not being able to fix things.
But he also, but then Castiel told him it was all going to happen anyway. There's nothing he could do about it.
Right.
I mean, your destiny is your destiny, and that's the way it's going to play out no matter how you get there. I think he would be less likely to blame himself, but of course he's still, even if he's told I didn't interact,
right.
I mean, is he really going to believe that?
Right, exactly.
Ah!
So, moving on.
How about that special children's storyline again?
It's back.
It's, well, see, that's what a friend of mine said. And I said, no, Kripke said he's done with it. And I thought, wait, it did kind of come back, but it's different. Because here it's a backstory. It's how he chose the kids, not his end game. So we don't know what he was really going to use the kids for, but it was all explained how he chose the kids. I think it's different.
True.
It's just tying up loose ends.
I think it's kind of adding another question, though, because up until now, we thought that he used those kids, we're going to use them to be his leader of this demon army, right? And mm-hmm. or be the ones to let him and everybody else out of the Hell's Gate. So now that that all happened, we thought that, oh, the special kids thing's never going to come up again. But then we find out he really had another purpose, and the angels don't even know what it is.
It's all one and the same. Maybe he knew that by having this big demon army that heaven or the angels and God and whatever would get involved. And so maybe he just knew this ahead of time. Maybe there's like some sort of peace treaty that they can do what they do and humans can do what they do and the angels will do what they do, but you just can't cross a line.
It still says there's something else going on with the kids or and then specifically Sam. This part of a plan and not just part of Sam becoming evil, I don't think.
So either Kripke lied to us, which I don't like. I just don't want to think he lied because he's been promising he was going to give us a Mary episode. Right. Last season, he was supposed to give it to us. Writer strike. Here's our Mary episode. See? He didn't lie. We right. have to trust in Kripke. If the dude tells me there's no more special children storyline, I'm going to make excuses why there isn't.
That's right. It was just saying how it happened.
He just had that interview not so long ago saying that he was done with it.
I know, but Castiel himself said we don't know what the end game was.
But maybe there is no end game. Maybe the end game is the war against the angels.
Maybe that's the end. Just Sam's creepy. Well, that leads to my other question. You know, what is that the end game? And to me, the previous resolution of the children kind of was like, I don't know, a letdown. So
you think?
I was kind of glad that there was going to be another explanation for all this plotting that went on with those kids and with Sam.
You know, it is nice to know, though, that half the season where we heard Sam whine and then Dean try to understand why Sam was whining and what he could do, and it was for something. Half of season two, which I really wanted to, like, reach into the TV screen and strangle them, it was for a reason. Makes me feel a little bit better.
Right.
Maybe not about Croatoan, but about the rest of the season.
Nothing's going to make us feel better about that one.
And continuing on the Sam. Okay, so there was 10 years to the date of the deal with Mary would be 5383, the day Sam was born. Mary was killed 6 months later. We still don't know what the deal with the 6 month, because that would be, what is, like, 10 years just kind of a guideline?
Maybe just not any sooner than 10 years.
That could be to explain why it's Sam and not Dean.
Right.
And to explain the generations. But I wonder if maybe the 6 month thing was just because if you try to feed demon blood to an infant, might right. cause big problems.
Or maybe he'd been feeding him through the 6 months and that's just the first time that Mary caught him.
Ah, that could be too. I didn't even think about that. Maybe it's not just a couple drops of blood, because he was saying how his blood was going to make him grow up big and tall and strong. Well, explains for the giant that we have, you know, okay. Jared Padalecki, and why he's so much bigger than Dean. So what's going on with him and Ruby?
I don't know. They're being crazy.
Maybe they're going to elope.
Maybe. He's all angry, and she's like, let's go, and they drive, and we're like, what?
His face was really set when he got into that car at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
He's determined to do something.
Was. They were up to no good.
Yes, they are. Sneaking around on Dean's back. This is the third episode this season now, and all three episodes, Sam's like sneaking away.
That's rude. That's what
it
that
is rude. My goodness.
And you know, one question we didn't get answered about Mary is the thing that hinted at last season and all her friends were dead.
Yes. That was also in my questions.
And didn't Ruby say she knew why they were killed?
Yes, she did.
So when's she going to spill the beans?
Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe she did spill the beans off screen to Sam.
Well, I bet. You know, Sam knows what happened. But I wonder if maybe it was just because she had made a deal with the demon, and part of that deal entitled not anyone to be in his way. You know, because he said, just stay out of my way. That's all you have to do. I'm going to come back in 10 years, stay out of my way. Well, obviously she didn't stay out of her way, his way, because otherwise she wouldn't have been on the ceiling.
Right.
But maybe he also took out all the people next to her that could possibly have been in the way.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe her friends. Oh, it might be as simple as maybe her friends were hunters.
It's possible. They were. Oh, why didn't we think of that? You did think of that. I did not.
I just thought of it just now.
That makes sense.
Because we didn't know that Mary was a hunter.
Right.
So maybe they either got hunted by the yellow-eyed demon, or they just weren't all that great hunters and got killed by something. And it always looks like natural causes, you know, heart attack or something.
Getting burned down.
Something. Yeah, exactly. Right. I bet it was just that he found out that she was a hunter.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know how she explained what happened to John after he woke back up.
And the authorities? Dead bodies?
Right. I was just making out with my dad, and he dropped dead. I mean, she obviously lied out the wazoo, since John never even suspected about the existence of demons until she's dead.
Yeah, and when you come from a hunting family, you learn to cover up.
Right, that's true.
So maybe nobody even found the bodies. Maybe she just, John, let's just not tell anyone about this or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, whatever you want.
Right.
You
know. Exactly.
Wussy John, remember?
Anything for you, babe. Dump these bodies in the river? Okay.
Well, they had to have done something because they stayed in Lawrence and John didn't know anything.
Right. Which seems kind of unusual.
It does seem. I mean, how did she keep that from him?
Yeah. I mean, did she just say he passed out? Tripped and fell?
Well, I mean, her whole past.
Right.
Like, how did she? I mean, you just can't suddenly turn off being a hunter. I mean, I suppose you could, but hunters are always hunted by demons, by spirits, by whatever.
True.
They kind of attract that sort of thing. How did she just manage to live without it?
Oh, and you know, a more head-spinning answer for the reason he didn't suspect anything is that maybe it didn't really happen the way we saw it. You know, with Dean in there influencing things, it turned out a little differently than the way it originally went down.
Yeah, like they might not have even, because they didn't know where to go when.
Exactly.
Because Dean told them where to go.
Exactly. So it could have been a little bit later that he ended up, I don't know.
Maybe when they went to investigate that guy who had his guts over the back 40, maybe they went to investigate that and the yellow-eyed demon saw her and followed her, and that's how he got to know her.
Maybe.
Or some other, you know, because he was like, where have you been hiding?
It's definitely a head scratcher.
You don't want to think too hard about this episode because it really does make your head hurt.
Right. All these, it happens with every time travel story ever.
Yep.
It makes the world spin. I have to sit down, have a glass of water.
Because otherwise, if Dean didn't bring the gun, now think of it this way. If Dean had brought the gun back with him, or it didn't happen, or like somehow the gun didn't get back to David Elkins, then how would John have gone to Elkins to get the gun to end up killing the yellow-eyed demon?
Right, he'd still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Which I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
Since that scene where Dean's all, I'm the one that kills you.
Even though he's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Stupid human. And you don't even have the scent.
That's right. Which, you know, also leads to credence to the theory that it didn't really happen, because if Dean gave him that kind of important information, he could have adjusted his plans to kill Dean sooner and all of this, you know, make sure he doesn't get killed. Because he knew Dean was a time traveler.
The only other thing that really jumped out at me from this episode, and I mean, this really jumped out, was that comment from Yellow Eyed Demon about how Dean has angels on his shoulder.
Well, he knew that that's the only kind of power that could have sent him back.
Well, not necessarily. Look at the trickster. There are going to be other creatures, or other entities beyond angels.
Oh, so that's defeating my whole theory.
Forget about the trickster. He has that capability.
Right. He has... Oh, that's a good point. But didn't he specifically say that that's the only kind of power that could mess with that? Didn't Yellow Eyes say that in this episode?
I don't remember if he said it was the only or one of the only.
Oh, maybe.
The comment about angels on your shoulders, it just makes me wonder if Dean really does have some sort of aura or, you know, some mark on him that other creatures, other like demons and so forth, can see.
Yeah, it's possible.
Like, has Dean had a guardian angel all these years and we just didn't know it? Is that why he's still alive?
I think he just got one. I mean, because we saw that reaction from the demons in the diner that in the first episode.
Yeah.
So,
but maybe they're lower level demons who can't see stuff like others can.
Maybe.
Can you honestly believe that Dean wouldn't be dead by now if he had, it was just human.
Well, he did die.
Yes, but think of all these times that he has, like, these horrible things happen to him, and he still survives.
Well, that's true. It has a lot to do with being a lead character on the TV show, I think.
I'm trying to explain how it could be possible that, I mean, especially with Sam's abilities, that Dean could be a little bit more protected.
I think he definitely is now, and it is possible that it didn't just start now.
Yeah, because to be chosen, like, how long has he been sort of on the Angel Watch list?
Who knows?
And then they pulled him out of hell because they're like, oh, crap, we got to do something. He didn't save himself.
Right.
Now, Sam is the only one who hasn't made a deal. Truly, the only one in his family who hasn't made a deal.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, but from what we've seen so far.
Right.
Because he tried. You know, I was remembering back to that crossroads where he went, the one where Sandy was there as the crossroad demon.
Right.
And he was like, I want to make a deal. And she's like, you don't have anything to give me.
Right.
Why wasn't his soul good enough? Why didn't they want him?
Because it's evil.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, why they would want Dean but not Sam? Well, they want Dean out of the picture because he had some sort of angelic influence or some sort of mark on him or something, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
Just brainstorming here.
That's right.
No, that's research has been done. Yeah. The whole episode is quite a head-scratcher.
Yes. As usual, we get as many questions as we get answers. But at least we got a few answers that we've been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, I think the answers far outweigh the questions. Yeah. So how about some quotes?
Well, I thought it was funny when Dean was at the table and he's like, what about the rest of the town? Did you find anything on the web of information that you have assembled?
Yeah, and about how the weather plans are coming by mail.
Right, yep. It's just a slip, and I just love the way he covered it up.
Yeah, that's a good one. Another Samuel. And Mary was like, and I'm here because... And he's like, family business, Mary. Family. Same words.
That's right.
John uses the same term Samuel does.
Oh, how convenient. Oh, I selected in the diner where Dean's got his cell phone out. And he's like, you know where I can get reception for this? And John's like, the USS Enterprise?
Yeah. They have to stick in those... sci-fi, Star Trek stuff all the time. Right. It's either Star Wars or Star Trek, one or the other. Or X-Files, I suppose. And probably the sentence that would sum up the entire episode was when Castiel said, destiny can't be changed, Dean. All roads lead to the same destination.
That's either very encouraging or very depressing.
All at once, perhaps.
Right.
And since we didn't get a whole lot more on Castiel... I'm still on the fence. Definitely more on the still do not like him. Perhaps we should put a little rating up.
A little meter. A little hand moving to one side or the other.
Yeah. Still have a little thumbs down on him here.
Oh, I'm still pretty much in the middle.
It didn't get much on him, except that he is kind of creepy watching other guys sleep. As far as legends and references, there really weren't any legends covered, but there were a couple references I'd like to point out. The first is where Dean said, okay, so what, Angel's got their hands on some DeLoreans? This references, as we mentioned in the discussion, the Back to the Future movies, the first one in 1985, and starred Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly, a teenager who travels through time using his mentor, Professor Brown, played by Christopher Lloyd's, time-traveling device mounted in a DeLorean. Marty goes back to when his parents first met, similar to what happens here with Dean. The second is where Samuel says, you're little orphan Mary now. It's referencing the comic strip girl created by Harold Gray in 1924 called Little Orphan Annie. Annie is an orphan adopted by millionaire Daddy Warbucks. Accompanied by her dog Sandy, Annie has had thousands of adventures over the decades, and even the subject of a musical, Annie, premiering in 1977. As far as music, they played the song Ramblin' Man by the Allman Brothers Band. Great song. And Go For Yourself by Kenny Smith and the Lovelighters. It plays when John and Mary are in the diner. The song of the night tonight is Na 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 by 46 Bliss. Check out the website at 46bliss.com. The song is brought to you tonight by the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network. Enjoy!
take more, take everything you got and give away. You give all, give everything you can away. Everything you can, everything you can.
Well, that's it for this week. Sorry for the delay in releasing this episode. I've been without internet at home for a couple of days due to a Time Warner cable outage, so I have to post this at work. The next all-new episode aired yesterday on the CW. Thanks for listening, and take care.
Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.